And welcome to the episode 2 of the V2 Academy. I'm Chris Lappin, and join me this week, I've got football coach and blogger, Peter Prickett. How are you doing this evening, Peter?
Very well, thanks. Good evening.
Have you had a fun week since we last spoke?
Usual bits of coaching, of course.
Yeah, so... Well, shortly we'll be joined by Bristol Rovers Academy manager, Johnny Henderson. But first, I have a quick question for Peter. I was watching the Olympics last night, and I thought, whilst I was watching it, have you ever watched another sport apart from football and thought these skills could be transferable into my coaching sessions?
Yes, plenty. Mm. I mean, for goalkeeping, handball, have you ever watched handball goalkeepers?
Yeah.
The stuff that they do, the training sessions they do, it's incredible. And in terms of working on reactions, I think that's fantastic. And also, I use a version of handball, it's more handball stroke netball,
yeah,
warm up to work on players' movement off the ball. So there was people holding and they can't move, and it relies on the players off the ball moving intelligently in order for the game to actually work. Warm up for older players, but for younger players, it might be a great introduction to passing and moving.
Yeah, so I remember when we used to play rugby, we played a version of what's it? British Bulldog to help with our tackling and like a CMO version where you just push each other.
Yeah, British Bulldog, a game that is technically banned in schools, but
if I said British Bulldog to my son, he'd have no clue what I was talking about, but I remember having fond memories of playing it at school.
Change the name, that's all you need to do, get around the ban. The other argument is that some people say that futsal is a different sport.
Yeah.
So you could say that sessions and skills in futsal are transferable into football.
Yeah.
Some people don't believe it to be a different sport. It's the same, but you're still kicking a ball. So that's a whole other debate there.
One that I've never got. You ever seen the cricket players playing rugby before yes. matches? I've never seen that. Do you know why they do that?
Well, I've seen them and I heard them interviewed about it, and it's just fun. It's just fun. It's just a way to get the heart moving and something they enjoy. The England players tend to play football in their warm-up, and it's just enjoyable, although players have got injured. Famously, Glenn McGrath got injured.
Yeah.
Stepping on a cricket ball, I think they were playing rugby, but the ball, there's a stray cricket ball on their pitch, and he trod on it and he missed the test.
Oof. So we're delighted to be joined on the line by Johnny Henderson. How are you doing this evening, Johnny?
Yes, good, thanks.
Yeah, I listened back to the interview you did with Anthony last year, and within it you mentioned that you used to play. What level did you play at?
I never really played at any decent level, to be honest. I was more of a recreational level. Played universities, played schools, and then played a little bit sort of lower Welsh league and amateur league when I was sort of in my early 20s. But it was never a playing career, nowhere near it.
So, at what stage did you decide coaching was the right path to go rather than playing?
I've always been sort of interested in coaching, so I did my coaching badges when I was about 16 and did bits and pieces when I was at school. So it was one of those things where I'd always wanted to be a PE teacher, and I'd always had an interest in football and had the opportunity sort of later on whilst in university to get involved in a bit more sort of coaching. I've been doing it for quite a while now.
Sorry, how long have you been involved as an academy coach?
I've been at Rovers now for just over 5 years. I've been at the club, but prior to that, I worked at non-league level at Merthyr Town in their Southern League side, but they're based in Wales. So I was a county manager there for a few years, and I've worked in their academy within the Welsh system since probably the early 2000s. So probably going back sort of 10, 12, 13 years now, I've been involved in academy football at one level or other.
How many different age groups did you directly coach?
I've coached everything. So I've coached everything from the under-7s and under-8s through to under-18s, 19s, college programmes, women and girls, disability squads, community programmes. So, if there's any sort of session that's ever been delivered, I've probably done it at some point.
And so from being an academy coach, how did you progress to the position you now have as academy manager?
My previous background, I was a sports development officer. So I worked for local authority for in South Wales. I did that for a number of years. It was mainly involved in sort of developing grassroots sport, looking at school provisions, working with teachers, and working with sort of community clubs to gain funding to develop their provision. So in terms of the sort of developmental aspect, that's kind of what my career was on top of the football-specific stuff. I then got the opportunity to come and work full-time within the Development Centre programme after leaving Merthyr. And then, you know, a couple of years later, I was appointed full-time within the academy before sort of stepping up the ranks of different roles. And I was lead foundation phase coach, which then became lead youth development phase coach, which then became head of coaching, and then over time became academy manager.
Obviously, academy manager, you know the full ins and outs of every little corner and pocket and detail of the academy. What does the average day look like at Bristol Rovers Academy?
It would depend on the age groups. So if you're looking at our under-18s provision, so they're the full-time boys, the scholarship lads, so they would come in around about 9:30 in the morning. They would have a team meeting with them before training. They'd be on the field from 10 till about 12. They then have lunch, and depending on what day of the week it was, it might be sort of followed up by either them being in college doing their education stuff, or whether that be an additional session, a gym-based programme, whatever it might be. Lots of personal development workshops and that sort of stuff. So that would be a typical day with the under-18s. Schoolboys would be slightly different, so they would come in training. They have a mix of, you know, between 1.5 and 2 hours on the field, as well as the athletic development session. We have a classroom-based session every night for each age group, so they're probably in around about between 2.5 to 3 hours a night when they're in with us, and they do a range of different things throughout the night.
What about for yourself? What does the day look like for you? What time do you have to start your day?
So, yeah, my typical day would be 9 o'clock start to a 9 o'clock finish, probably about 3 days a week in terms of doing that time frame. And then I'll have a day off in the week, and then the Friday is usually a shorter day, so we're looking at around about 9 o'clock through till about sort of 3 o'clock in terms of training the morning with under-18s, and then getting things prepped for all the age groups for the games on the weekend. We then have games on a Saturday, either home or away, with the 16s or 18s, and then the Sunday would be just observing the schoolboy games on the Sunday morning at the home games.
Is your involvement on match day purely to watch?
Yeah, so I said each of the age groups, certainly on a Sunday, they've got a coach with each age group, and I'm more here just observing the players, observing the coaching, getting an idea of what's going on, and, you know, the full scope of the programme. I don't tend to lead a squad on a Sunday, and unless, of course, there's people unavailable or there's opportunities to do so, but it's more just a sort of facilitating and overseeing, giving me a chance to see everything in action. On the Saturday, again, it would be more supporting the under-18s, so they've obviously got their own coaching people in place who run that programme, and I'll just, again, observe, facilitate and support them where they need it.
With the coaches, is there a heavy amount of individual contact between yourself and that coach in meetings, or is it more of a team meeting structure that you operate?
So we have a range of between full-time and part-time staff, so the full-time staff are in every day, so we've got quite a good dialogue in terms of interaction between the different phases. The part-time staff will be managed by the lead phase coaches, so the under-9s to 12s part-time coaches will be managed directly by the lead foundation phase coach, but I'll still have interaction with them on a training night, again being around to support them in terms of getting to see what's going on in the programme. So it really depends on the individual and how much contact we have with them, but this, you know, this sort of weekly contact with every member of staff within the programme at some point.
And as academy, as being charged with the academy, so you must be heavily involved in the playing philosophy that's set out. Is that reflected in the way that the coaching philosophy comes across as well?
Yeah, so we've got great pride in our programme, the fact that, you know, every coach and every member of staff has got an opportunity to have some ownership and responsibility within it. So we sat down a couple of years ago in the academy management team, and we outlined a playing philosophy that we want within the academy, the type of player that we're looking at and the way that we want to play, not necessarily the system and the formation, but more the style of play from the age of 9 through to 18. So, you know, we sort of developed that over time. And in terms of how that looks from a delivery perspective, then we've got quite a flexible approach to our coaching curriculum. So, you know, the days of us having a very prescriptive week-by-week breakdown of what we'd expect our coaches to be delivering is, you know, for the last 2 years, we've kind of put that out the window. So what we have is an overview on the types of things that we'd like our players to be working on based on each age group. So it's quite age-appropriate in terms of their competency. And then the coaches have got a bit of free rein within the framework that we work under to deliver things that meet the needs of the player. So the idea behind it was, you know, if we write a syllabus in July time, by the time we get to October, do we really actually know where the players are in terms of their stage of development, and then we're stuck to following something that's on a bit of paper for the sake of following process? Or do we give the coaches real ownership to actually work with the players based on the individual needs of the players?
Yeah, I've been there myself where I've written down a curriculum and schedule, and then come October, November, I've got to throw this away because it's just not working.
Yeah.
They've gone somewhere different, so we've got to just scrap it and adjust. It feels very comforting to have it there, but if you stick to it, you may not necessarily be doing the right thing.
Yeah, and kind of what we looked at was, in terms of obviously learning is not linear, so obviously a great lot of research on non-linear learning quite recently, and you know, part of what we looked at was, you know, sometimes players need to spend a bit more time on one thing and a bit less time on something else. So instead of us moving on just for the sake of moving on, we might revisit the same sort of theme for sort of 2, 3, 4 sessions until we're comfortable that players have adapted to it and got an opportunity to really get some good learning out of it, as opposed to just ticking a box. Yeah, we've done that, we've boxed that off, let's move on to the next topic, when they haven't actually got a good understanding or a good application of the information they need at that time.
So how does the club go about recruiting players for the academy?
We have a full-time head of recruitment, and we're currently in the process of expanding our recruitment department to have 10 regional scouts.
Yeah.
So what we tend to look at is a lot of it's recommendations from other clubs, or it's just been out on the circuit and getting to see what else is about there. We have a player profile that we sort of look and identify in terms of what an academy player, the attributes that we'd be looking for at various age groups. And then it's up to the scouts and the recruitment people to go out, identify those sort of players. And then we simply bring them in for a 6-week process. So when they're in the building, they're fully integrated into the programme. They work with the age group coaches. We get to see them in our environment and, you know, get to know them as young boys and as young men, and see how they develop and get to know the parents, get to know a little bit about them, and then see how they fit within the programme, what we're trying to work towards.
So does being probably the biggest city in your part of the country help with recruitment?
There's quite a lot of competition in the region, so that's, I mean, obviously the club as a whole had, you know, in terms of over the last couple of years, we've gone through a bit of a fall and rise, if you like, in terms of dropping down to the conference.
Yeah.
That had an implication in terms of being able to sign boys from certain areas when there was other bigger clubs, in inverted commas, sort of looking at the same sort of players. So, you know, it is a big catchment area, but again, we've got lots of competition from the likes of Bristol City, Southampton are heavily involved in the region, West Brom.
Mm.
You know, Cardiff and Swansea have got development programmes in the region as well, and then you've got the likes of Cheltenham's not too far up the road, you've got, you know, Yeovil just down the road as well. So it's quite although it's a big region,
you know,
there's still got a lot of competition in terms of trying to tap into the same players. But I think we do quite well in terms of our recruitment. I think, you know, the key thing for us is once we get them into the building, we would back ourselves that our programme is as good as, if not better than, a lot of the ones in the region. And you know, once the players have actually been into us and seen what we can offer, we tend to find that we do quite well from a recruitment aspect.
So in the really young groups, like 8, 9, 10, what should a player expect in their first year or two at the club?
Lots of fun. So ultimately, the key thing for us is we still got to remember that they're children.
Yeah.
They're not young professional players. That, you know, they're here for part of their development. Although it's a football perspective, we're still working with other people's kids. So that's the key thing we try and remember as a group of staff, that it's got to be engaging for the players. Certainly with the younger ones, it'll be lots of ball mastery, lots of individual sort of technical work, all done within sort of problem solving, chaotic type environments, and lots of game based stuff. So you know, we've got a whole concept of, you know, trying to work along a strapline that we've had for a while, looking at the performance playground.
Yeah.
And certainly within our younger age groups, you know, for example, our athletic development programme, if you like, is purely based on playground games. So we play a lot of like bulldog and tag, and we do a lot of multi-sport stuff, handball, dodgeball, those type of things that the kids love. But it's all developing them as athletes as well as footballers and young people as well. So that's something that's quite big within certainly our younger programme.
I mean, that's exactly what we were talking about just before you came on. We're just started to talk about what it actually looks like for a player within the academy. Now,
right.
That's going to begin with talent ID before he even gets in. So the question would be, what is it that you look for in a young player?
It would be twofold. So the first thing that we're looking at to identify him to come into the building is more just confidence to get on the ball. So, you know, have they got a little bit of ability when they get on it? So you're looking for that little moment of sort of something that excites you. You know, a player who can get on the ball and try and be creative, who isn't scared to try new things. You know, in terms of physical attributes, you know, you're just looking for kids who are good movers and good balance coordination, as opposed to being the biggest and strongest and the quickest lad. Because obviously the kids develop a different race, and we've got mechanisms to play them outside their age band if it's a sort of physical thing that's letting them down. But the key thing is just that little spark, that willingness to get on the ball, that willingness to try things, try and be positive, try and be creative about the way they play is probably something that we would look at from an external perspective. And then the key thing is, once we've got them in the building, is just seeing what they're like in terms of their attitude to learning, and do they embrace challenge? Are they willing to take on information? Do they want to try and push themselves, you know, and try different things as opposed to the safe, repetitive things that some players might do? And for us, if you've got a kid who's willing to learn and has got that little bit of spark, then that's probably a good indication that they're going to develop further within the programme.
Working in grassroots, one of the things that I look to develop in players is players who are creative and who are happy to, as you talk about, get on the ball and be exciting. My one concern about that is, what about the other side of the game? What about the defensive side of the game? So when you're looking at players, you're looking at players who are exciting, but how do we identify the players who are going to be good defenders?
Again, you'd look at age appropriate. So certainly within the younger age groups, and if we're talking, you know, pre-academy, before they get signed at under nines, if you're looking at under eights and nines, I'm not really too concerned by their defensive attributes, if you like, because we can develop that in time. Certainly as you get older, obviously it becomes paramount, it becomes a necessary part of the game, obviously it does. So then you start to maybe look for different things as you get through the pathway. But certainly with the younger ones, it isn't just about their individual ability, and whether that's, you know, 1v1s in and out of possession, maybe that's a better way of terming it. You know, do they, you know, are they competent in a 1v1 situation defensively and in attacking situations? That's probably a better way of, you know, sort of identifying what you'd be looking for in the younger players.
I remember reading a document from Valencia, and they were saying that they look for, first of all, players who have enough technical ability, and it said those tended to be players who at their grassroots club played in more advanced positions, and then once they're in the academy, just like you said, they can work back and eventually find a defensive position if that's for them.
Yeah. That's kind of why we don't pigeonhole players with the younger age groups, because we've had, you know, every kid that comes into us, you know, they're all wingers, they're all strikers, they're all midfielders. You very rarely get players at under eight who identify themselves as being a centre half. You know, so in terms of what they see, they want to excite, and they see the Ronaldos and the Messis, and that's where it probably gets the most attention from the media. So that's what's perpetuated as what a footballer is, and that's where the role models come from. But then what you try and do, you try and educate them that there is another side to the game, and then as they go along, and you can try and identify role models. So, I mean, for us, a great one is Tom Lockyer, who's in our first team, who came through our academy system, and he's 21, 22 years of age, and he's made over 150 appearances for the first team. So in terms of a role model from a defensive perspective, he's the one that we would pinpoint the players look at and that sort of thing. But yeah, like I said, it's about not trying to get everything too soon, and ultimately if you look at the younger age groups, there's a lot of things that still need to be developed, and it's just, you know, picking what the appropriate those young players would be, and then working with everything else.
As Jamie Carragher said, no one wants to grow up to be Gary Neville.
Yeah.
How much individual work is done with each player?
Within the sort of youth development phase, there's probably a little bit more. Within the foundation phase, it's quite generic in terms of just developing the overall toolbox of what the player's competency would be. But then you challenge individuals within the session. So it's not really sort of individual isolated work. It's more, you know, how would you challenge a player who needs to do certain things, whether it be to receive in the back foot to play out, or whether you want them to be more engaged in 1v1 situations or whatever it might be. It's just conditioning the game that allows them to get that opportunity to practice that within the core session. With the older ones, youth development phase, we We do something on one of the evenings where we do some group work based on their individual needs from their action plans. And that could be based on something they really need to work on in terms of an area for development, or it could be something that we see as a real strength in their game that we want to be even better at. So we almost do and split them into smaller groups, and they can work on some really things that are refined based on their needs. And then when you get into the under-18s, obviously got a lot more time with the boys, so they've got a little opportunity every day to work on things based on their individual action plans. And then there's a session a week that you probably concentrate a little bit more on sort of position-specific work and, you know, their real detailed understanding of what they need as players.
Do you put a time frame or have a time frame in mind for the individual player to make that improvement, or is it something that you're just happy to see them doing the work on it?
It's ongoing, so you kind of say, like, it's not, I think it's very difficult to, like I say, we're talking about non-linear learning, to say, right, in 6 weeks' time, you're going to be competent at X, Y, or Z, because that might be something they pick up in three sessions, and then you want to progress it and make it more difficult for them, or it might be something that takes 6 months to get right, based on where they are in their stage of development. So, you know, I'd be very conscious not to put exact time frames on things, but you constantly reassess it. So maybe you reassess it every 6 weeks and see whether it needs to be progressed or whether they need to continue to work towards the same area that they're looking to improve on.
So the area of improvement that's identified wouldn't necessarily play a role in whether they remained at the academy or not?
It could do. It could. I mean, I suppose ultimately, if it's something that's really detrimental to the game, and you get towards the end of the season, and it's becoming apparent that, you know, ultimately we are in the business of producing professional footballers first and foremost. So, you know, it's unfortunate you can't keep everybody on. But it might be a case of that if there's a player who has got something that's really detrimental to the game, and they haven't made, you know, big improvements in that area over the course of a season, then it might mean that it might jeopardise a place with the academy. But ultimately we're looking to try and develop them. You know, the first point of contact is, what are we doing as coaches? If after 3 years they haven't improved, then maybe we've got to look a little bit closer to home to what we're doing to support the boys, as opposed to just putting all the onus on the player to have complete responsibility for themselves.
Alright, it's time for Ask the Coach, where we ask listeners questions. So
okay,
at Back to Back C, which is Back to Back Coaching on Twitter, they asked, what do you see as the biggest challenge for a modern player?
The biggest challenge for the modern player is probably, you know, it's probably a bigger issue than football, I would say. I think it comes down to society in general. Probably players think that, or players and kids have got they think they've got this right to have everything too soon. So it's developing that work rate and developing that culture and that standard that probably isn't reinforced in society. So we've got quite high standards for what we expect of our players in terms of their conduct and their behaviour and their approach to things and their work ethic. And, you know, sometimes we will debate as coaches, you know, whether those players meet our high standards. And the question we always used to ask was, well, look, would you get away with it at home? And more often than not, the answer is probably yes, they would get away with having, you know, that lesser standard at home, when they get away with a little bit more. And, you know, schools and society allows players to get away with a lot more than maybe they would have 20 years ago. So it's important that, you know, if in terms of the standards of professional football, you know, we need to reinforce that first and foremost, I would say. And that's, you know, that's an enormous challenge, because you're almost trying to put a standard on them that isn't the societal norm for kids in everyday life.
Yeah, I was going to add that I sometimes have found that we expect a child to reach a level and be responsible over something, and yet actually you find that sometimes adults aren't even capable of doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, correct.
So if you expect the child to do something that an adult actually turns out not to be capable of, you sometimes have a question whether you're asking too much of them.
Yeah, and that's it. You've always got to be conscious that, you know, as we said, they are children, and they are going to... There is going to be moments when things aren't done, but it's about being realistic on the bigger picture, and it is a long-term aim to develop players and people, and it's just, you know, small steps.
And another one is, at AET Football have asked, is there an individual player you're most proud of coming through the academy?
Like I said, Tom Lockyer is probably a great example for someone. He came into our programme at 16. And then, you know, like I said, he's was tagged as being a future captain of the club. You know, he's made over 150 appearances and been involved in the Welsh setup, despite the fact only being sort of 21, 22 years of age. So he's kind of a role model for us within the academy. There's other players that we've seen, you know, go on, you know, a little bit before my time, but players that have gone on to have good careers and people that have come through the system. And then there's also other people that have gone on to do other things, so people that have gone on to, you know, have good coaching careers and things like that as well. So some players playing at a good level. Matt Macy's at Arsenal. He's obviously one who's, you know, from our perspective, as a progression point of view, we're quite proud of.
Yeah.
Alfie Santos at Derby County. You know, he's just he's 21, 22 years of age as well now, and he just signed another pro deal at Derby for next season. So yeah, it's a bit of a mix. You know, boys that are playing week in, week out within our first team. The most recent academy graduate is Alfie Kilgore, so he's an 18-year-old centre-half who got his pro contract this summer, and he's been with us since he was 8 years old. So to see players come, you know, right way through the programme, even long before my time, but boys who've been here and that coaches will have worked with over that long time, it's quite pleasing for us to show that we can produce first-team players from year dot.
So before we finish, do you want to plug your social media?
Yeah, anybody on Twitter, it's Johnny Henderson. Is the big one for the, in terms of the academy itself. You know, we try to share much of what we do within the academy, so that's just at Rovers Academy. So we're quite proud of our programme. We like to share a lot of what we do on there, and you know, we're open to sharing ideas and bouncing ideas around and showing people what we do, because you know, it's nothing cloak and dagger. We're quite proud of the programme, and you know, we're always open to learning from other people as well.
And the links will be in the description below this interview. So I've really enjoyed speaking today. I'm sure Peter has as well.
Yes, so. Brilliant. Thanks for your time.
No problem, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so good luck with the next season. I'd love to have you on again in the future. So.
Yeah, no problem at all. I said anytime, if you need guys, give me a shout.
Okay, well, I've stopped recording there. So. Okay. That was brilliant. Thank you.
Nice one. No problem at all, guys. Thank you very much.
Cheers, thanks.